I remember when I started listening to rap music, one of my greatest experiences was going through classic mixtapes. It's because it has a certain feel to it, and it's always cool seeing, you know, artists go into lanes that they might not dive into on studio albums. So Luca and I today are going to be going through our top five mixtapes of all time. So no studio albums, strictly mixtapes, and we're doing content like this on the daily here at NFR Podcast. So smash the subscribe button, hit the like button if, you know, we mentioned the favorite mixtape of yours, and if we didn't, leave it in the comment section because I'm always anxious to see your take. So Lou, take us through this and, you know, tell me a bit of your experience with mixtapes in the past.
Yeah, I love mixtapes, and it's sad to see that it's kind of an era that's from the past because now most artists are just releasing studio albums. But before we actually get into this list, we're actually doing exclusive content and lists just like this on our Patreon. So check it out in the description below. We have a new bonus video every week exclusive to Patreon. So check that out if it does interest you. But going into this list, man, I'll be honest, it was hard to actually formulate.
It was super hard to do it. And like, what was the one thing that you think has to happen for a mixtape to be called iconic or a classic? Because now that we're maybe a decade past it and that the prime of mixtapes are gone, what's the one thing you remember it for? And a lot of these projects, what's one thing that they have in common for you?
I would say that in terms of the discographies of these artists, they stand alone because they did something that these artists only did for, let's say, this mixtape and nowhere else in their entire catalog. So what I'm looking for, you know, like any hip-hop project, is just solid lyricism, you know, great production, same thing that you go into for any kind of project. But with a mixtape, there's kind of a looser feeling, so I kind of, you know, appreciate that. But let's actually go through some of our honorable mentions before we get into our top five. So for myself, I know Sylvia Demo is one of them that I wanted to include. Apart from that, the Dedication series is also pretty heavy in my rotation.
Crit Was Here was a big one for me. Any big Crit mixtape could make the list. We felt really bad not including anything in our top
also,
five.
Also, American Corruption by Capital Steez.
That's a major
super
one.
Underrated, man.
That's major. Days Before Rodeo by Travis Scott's in there. If you're reading this, It's Too Late is a bit of a newer one, 2015, but still a really solid mixtape at that. Even, you know what, Tory Lanez's is the New Torontos were actually pretty nice, too. I remember coming up listening to those. So there's a lot of good ones.
Also, 50 Cent's mixtapes back in the day.
50 Cent's mixtapes were really good. The No Ceiling series, and we obviously have a Lil Wayne mixtape on this. Don't you guys stress out. But let's kick off this list, all right? So at number five, guys, Friday Night Lights by J. Cole from 2010. What is there not to say about this project? It almost feels as if this is a studio album from him. It almost ties into his whole theme of basketball and sports, which is a genius concept that he executed so well. So what do you love about this mixtape? And maybe take me through the first time you heard it, because it was an experience for me at that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the first time I heard it was probably after I'd already gone through some of Cole's first studio albums, and I just heard, like, okay, he has this mixtape out called Friday Night Lights. Let me check it out. And I was blown away because, to me, even after the offseason, this is the project where he actually has the most hunger in terms of his delivery. And I feel like we get some of J. Cole's best rapping ever on this mixtape. For example, a song like, you know, Too Deep for the Intro, for example, which actually starts us off. Very, you know, intimate content matter. And not only that, but it's cool to think that most of the songs that were on this mixtape were actually meant for his debut album, The Sideline Story, but the label thought that they wouldn't sell as much. They're like, we don't want you putting this out on the album. So he decided, you know, to hold fans over to release Friday Night Lights. And I also like the idea that he actually had a very, you know, fully thought out concept, which is the parallel of wanting to make it as a basketball player and also wanting to pursue his dreams as an artist. So I really appreciated that. But what makes this project stand out in Cole's catalog?
I think it's probably the iconic tracks that I have through this. So I'm going to go through a couple of tracks that I really fuck with. I have my Dat Piff app open right now. I'm a big fan of this application. You guys could access all of these mixtapes if you want to, free of charge. Too Deep for Intro, Before I'm Gone, Vilmatic, Enchanted, Higher, In the Morning, The Autograph, Best Friend, Cost Me a Lot.
Two-Face.
Like, there's too many in here that actually stand out for me. And as you were saying, I think that it's also genius how there is that parallel to him being hungry and him trying to make it out. Because when I was watching the offseason documentary, he was giving a bit of context of where he was at in his life when he was creating these mixtapes and when he had gotten serious with his rap career. So he obviously has the warm up and then he has Friday Night Lights. So this feels like the upgraded version of it. This feels like something that, you know, could pass for a studio album. Obviously, like, there's a Devil in a New Dress sample and a bunch of other.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bunch of different ones. But for the most part, it really feels concise. It feels like a good, strong track list. And let me ask you, where does this place in J. Cole's discography? We're going to do one in the future, a video separately. But
a full discography ranking. Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely top three. That's all I'm going to say.
Top three for you?
It's definitely one of Cole's best projects. And if you told me that it was his best, I wouldn't be too mad at that opinion. I just love Like I said, the hunger that he displays on here, and also how he makes us feel the weight of the inner city violence that he's witnessed, because you hear the frustration and kind of the urgency throughout his lyrics. For example, on Before I'm Gone, he raps, "We tired of only having just a piece, and fuck policing, they killing people, what's the reason? His daughter starving and she fucking freezing, so no wonder why he fucking squeezing." Like, the multisyllabic rhyming, the internal rhymes, just shows you that J. Cole was actually in his peak form as a rapper, in my opinion. And apart from that, I mean, I love that there's so many samples used here. I believe 14 out of the 20 songs have samples in them.
That is correct.
And J. Cole, of course, added a lot of his own production. And to hear him rap over Devil in a New Dress or some Erykah Badu vocals, like, it was a beautiful experience. And for me, this is a very warm mixtape. It's super accessible. Mm-hmm. And I think that whole underdog story of, let's say, people from small towns trying to make it out and, you know, find what really drives them and trying to find out what career they want to pursue, that's something that so many people can relate to it. So that relatability factor really wins me over.
It does win me over as well. And I also love the soundscape and like the sort of environment that J. Cole paints throughout this whole mixtape, because I love it when he does that, especially like in his later studio albums, like you're going to see where, you know, this sort of stems from. Like, this is the first time where I feel as if, you know, J. Cole formed a project where he allows you to really enter his world. Like, the warm-up was really just, I feel as if, more of like a dedication vibe where he would just take instrumentals and he would absolutely kill freestyles, and it was more like had a looser feel to this. But Friday Night Lights for me was legitimately like a scene. I felt as if I was in that Cole world that was being birthed. And then, you know, as you see, you know, the rest of his discography, you know, unfold, you could understand why Friday Night Lights was so important. But that's our number 5 pick, guys. Number 4, Live Love ASAP by ASAP Rocky, 2011. We just did a review on this. It's a near perfect mixtape for us. And what is there not to like about this? I mean, you know, the chop and screwed sound throughout all of it, the psychedelic production, ASAP Rocky's cadences and flows. I mean, the iconic songs throughout the whole track list, you know, just what it did for New York at the time. Like, take me back to Live Love ASAP, and maybe what's one word that you could attribute to the project if you have to think about it?
One word to attribute to the project, I would go with hazy.
Okay,
I would go with. And a big part of that is the production, primarily handled by Clams Casino. And this project is so revolutionary, because what this project did is that it took and kind of formed that cloud rap sound that we now have today. It kind of started with Clams Casino and Lil B before this project came out, but this one took that sound to the masses, where you have these lo-fi type beats where the tempo is pretty slowed down, and you also have these very dreamy type soundscapes. And that's what we get out of this project. And it still sounds so fresh today.
It does.
And ASAP Rocky's charisma really won me over throughout this whole project. And the flair that he brings throughout his flows on songs like Palace or Peso, like, these are flows that I've never heard, not only from Rocky, but from any other artist prior to this. So it was kind of, you know, it was cool to hear a new voice fresh off the scene. And the fact that he is a New York rapper coming in with more of a Southern style, it kind of took everybody off guard, and people were like, whoa, like, this is somebody to watch, because he's bringing something fresh to the game.
And I think he did. And I think he did it in a way where he was also able to appeal to a different type of crowd. Because when you look at the sound, like, let's say the landscape of psychedelic rap, this was a pioneer in that lane, and it really pushed the whole genre forward. I mean, you know, talking about groups like, let's say, you know, Flatbush Zombies and a lot of other like groups that were coming up around New York. Like, think about it. If this project didn't drop at that time, would the lane be as free, and would it be as accessible for these artists to be able to come in and do their thing? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Plus, I mean, Space Ghost Perp did a great job on this. Ty Beats did a fantastic job on this. There was just so much going on with this project that makes it iconic. And also, I love how it actually forms, you know, the whole, I would say, ASAP Rocky persona. That was one thing that I fell in love with, because not only does, you know, ASAP Rocky get personal, not too much throughout the track list, only a couple of songs, but more of the braggadocious Rocky that not only talks about maybe, you know, sometimes being in the streets and, you know, doing some illegal activity, but also having a fashion sense. So it shows the duality within maybe the alter ego that he's trying to portray throughout this album. And for the most part, I mean, it was so well executed, because even the voice changes throughout this, like the way that he's able to come in with this, you know, muffled down voice.
When he lowers the pitch,
It's so fucking cool. And it wasn't the first time this was done, obviously, but I feel as if so many other artists start to get into this after ASAP Rocky presented it on this project. So there's a lot that goes into
and
this.
And it definitely feels like you're kind of induced in this drug coma with Rocky. That's kind of the way that the project progresses. And then you actually reach a song like Demons towards the end, and that's where he gets more introspective and talks about about how he's worried that he might have, you know, smoked away his brain, and he kind of is grappling with the fact that all this drug consumption maybe isn't for the best. So it's cool to kind of have to see him have that light bulb moment at the end of the track list. But like you said, this project really inspired a lot of psychedelic albums to come later on, and also a lot of trap albums. Because if you think about it, like in today's day and age, a lot of trap albums do have a psychedelic component in the production, and this project was the one that really kicked that into gear. So it was cool to see ASAP Rocky be a pioneer, and to me, this is the definition of a classic mixtape.
Do you remember how many people were bumping this mixtape back then? It was absolutely crazy, especially like I'm still bumping it to this day. But I'm not sure if you remember, like everyone in their like Instagram names were using, instead of I think it was S, everyone was using a V because of ASAP Rocky, and like he was doing the branding and that whole sort of thing. That was just something cool that I thought I'd mention. But we have that at our number four position. Let's move into the top three, guys, and let's talk about Faces by Mac Miller. And this dropped back in 2014. Man, like this is the thing. Once you get to the top three, you could sort of place these anywhere. And when you get the Faces, many people would maybe say Kids is in that conversation, and you know that it could kind of pass
no,
it. But
no,
I
no
think
way.
Faces is an absolute lock. The concept behind this album is absolute genius. Especially, you know, the kind of state that Mac Miller was in was, you know, it was interesting to observe, because he said it himself. He was not sober while creating this project whatsoever, and it's a really trippy album. Like I've experienced this album and different states of mind, and it's really a different type of listen. So take me through it, man. I know you bumped this recently and like your mind was blown again. So what were those things that really like got you going, and what stands out from this project for you?
This is one of Mac Miller's best projects, and what a catalog he has. And I feel like it was the perfect transition from Watching Movies with the Sound Off, because already there we kind of got this trippy, drugged out type of Mac Miller. But Faces took that kind of idea and really, you know, blew it out of the water. And this was a celebration, I would say, of the type of artist that Mac Miller wanted to be, where he was just being super real and authentic with the fans, taking them through, you know, his drug abuse in such an introspective manner. And there's so many highlights throughout this mixtape. For example, Here We Go, one of the most triumphant victory laps that I've ever heard. Him screaming out, you know, I made it without a Drake feature. That's an iconic line for me. And honestly, to me, what really blows me away, I would have to say, is the concept of Faces. And it's absolutely genius, because if you go to multiple songs, for example, on Here We Go, he raps, shit has changed, ain't Lil Malcolm with a baby face. Then on a song like Malibu, he raps, I'm the only suicidal motherfucker with a smile on. And this is him kind of referring to how the faces that he's seen and the face that people perceive of his own face, faces tend to be misleading. That's kind of the idea of this. And Mac Miller was trying to say that, like, although you might see my face a certain way, faces are deceiving and nobody really knows what's going on inside. So this project was Mac letting us in on his mind.
And you see this again on a song like Birthday, actually. And this is something I noticed, where he's kind of at his own birthday and he's kind of talking about, like, all these people are here again trying to fucking celebrate my shit. And like, it kind of puts you into the setting of the song. And then you start to realize that as the song progresses, Mac Miller's mental sort of gets darker and darker and darker. Then, you know, iconic songs like Uber for Me with Mike Jones, Rain with Vince Staples. Then you have, hold on a second. Faces and Shapes is fucking incredible. Diablo is a top three. Colors and Shapes, my bad. Diablo is a top three song for me from Mac Miller. Like, there's so much that goes into this. Therapy, bro. Therapy is such a great fucking track. Like, you could go through this whole track list song after song and you'll realize that there's not a single skip. And how many songs is there? There's like 27 on here, right?
No, it's something. There's like 24 and 25 if you include the song Yeah, which just came out as a bonus out. Song. And I just want to say that one thing I appreciate about this project is that it's as if Mac Miller is like an oil painter here, because he's not scared to show us the messiness of his art, and he's kind of mixing different colors together. And by that I mean, you know, production wise he's mixing in so many different instruments and sonic palettes that he's kind of being messy, but he's hoping that it all makes sense. And it does make sense, because on a song like Therapy, like you mentioned, an amazing song, and on that one he's kind of rapping about how he doesn't need, you know, let's say psychological therapy. His therapy is living life to the fullest and saying how at the end of the day it doesn't really matter. It's a super dark project. I want to really say that, because you get a lot of existentialism from Mac Miller.
Yeah.
It's a very nihilistic point of view where he's kind of like, when I die, like, who's going to remember me? So it's super dark content matter, but the way that he's kind of having this downward spiral is very immersive as an experience, but also very hard to listen through. But overall, man, like, I was just floored by this. And to see everything come together, also a three-track run like Happy Birthday, Wedding, and Funeral, how that ties into the circle of life, it's just fucking genius, bro.
Yeah, that was massive. And
is, like, this his most well-thought-out concept project?
That's a very good question. Maybe it depends on how you... Well, right next to Swimming, I think. Like, that's probably, like, where I'm at with it. But another thing that I love about Faces is the replay value of it for me, because it's not a project that I'm necessarily revisiting, like, let's say, every week of my rotation. I'll go back to some songs, but there's times within my year where I feel as if I'm in a dark period, or I feel as if I'm in more of a different type of mood, where this is the only album I'll play back to front. Like, I did this all of October, where every single day where I was, example, maybe doing graphics for the podcast, or I was doing some stuff, all I would play was Faces, because it kind of puts you into a different mood where you start to feel comfortable with everything dark that's going on. That's another thing I like about Faces, is that there's this subtle comfort within chaos throughout the whole album. And that's something that Mac Miller does a really good job of, is painting that soundscape and that environment for you. But number three on our
list.
Hold
on, before we get to that, I just have one bar I want to shout out on Grand Finale. And I only picked this up on doing my re-listen for this episode. And on Grand Finale, he raps, "Mixing uppers and downers, practically suicide." So of course, if you mix drugs, it could lead us to, you know, to you killing yourself. But at the same time, it's also the same way that when you run a laps, let's say on a basketball court or in gym class, you're doing suicides and you're going from one, you know, from one end of the gym to the next. You're going up and down. So
sure, that's deep.
It's really cool to see Mac Miller coming in with amazing wordplay. And I feel like he also leveled up as a rapper, and to see him tackle these jazz beats, I'm just mesmerized by this thing. But let's go on now to number two, which is The Drought 3 by Lil Wayne, which came out in 2007. And the run that Lil Wayne had from 2005 to 2007 was amazing. He did The Carter 2 in 05, and then he dropped mixtapes such as The Dedication, Dedication 2, and The Drought 3. So let me ask you this. Wayne has one of the best catalogs in mixtapes of all time, but what makes this one really stand out?
Okay, I'm gonna say this. He has the best mixtape catalog of all time. When you take into consideration the Dedication series, No Ceilings, Sorry for the Wait, and then this, you know, The Droughts, there's no one that's able to touch his catalog of mixtapes. And it was also a thing of, like, Wayne mentions this on this mixtape, like, I murder every single part two I touch. Like, and that's a fact. Like, this is the maybe purest mixtape you could possibly get, and maybe, like, the best quote-unquote mixtape for mixtape value you could get, because it's pure, like, Wayne going at it on every single beat. And I'm gonna let you, because I know you took down a lot of wordplay bars on this, and I'll let you read them out, but I think that this is the project maybe where he has his best wordplay on any other one. Maybe the Carter 3 is better, but again, neck and neck for me. I also think the beat selection on this was absolutely ridiculous. As far as other mixtapes that come close to this for Wayne for me, as far as beat selection, is Dedication 4, but still within that realm, and the original No Ceilings. Especially the way that Wayne is coming in with this comfortable cadence, and he's also trying out different things like Jamaican flows and cadences. Yeah. He's also trying out, let's say, talking on certain beats and kind of relaxing himself. He's also has, like, a looser feel where it kind of immerses you into the studio sessions with him, and you could picture, like, Wayne in the studio with, like, his red bandana on the microphone, and he's just spitting, and then he calls one of his boys to come in, like Briscoe, come in and, like, spit a bar, you know, at the beginning of the song. So that's what I like about it, is that it feels like the most traditional mixtape that you could possibly get. Like, this is the best mixtape per value that you could get, but this and number one could be interchanged for me at any time. So for you, like, what makes this project stand out, and why do you think it's in the upper echelon of Wayne projects as a whole, not even just mixtapes at this point?
This is just the pinnacle of what a rap mixtape should be, because Wayne literally said, okay, let me take a bunch of your beats and do them better than you did. Let me rap over them much better than you did. And he did that for the most part on a lot of these beats. And it's a double disc project. There's 29 songs in all. And I was never bored for a second.
No,
from
you're
1
not.
To 29, he is rapping his ass off. And there's no real concept behind this mixtape. And maybe that drops down some points for people, but that's never really the idea with mixtapes to begin with. To me, it felt like on this project, Wayne was just so free-flowing. If it's him freestyling or him breaking song conventions such as not having any hooks or just having back-to-back verses, you know, with other rappers such as Nicki Minaj or Currency, really amazing stuff. And I got to read out some bars here because
go for it. I've been waiting
his wordplay is crazy. So on Put Some Keys On That, he raps, I'm a beast, I'm a dog, I should rap with a muzzle. Peyton Manning flow, I just go, no huddle. And then he raps, I got the hardest bars, call me the warden.
Oh, that's good.
Like, it's just, it's super playful from Wayne. And like I said, to me, this is the most lyrical display that I've gotten from Wayne. And it's kind of like he's doing lyrical calisthenics. Like, it's just, he's exercising his skills on this like I've never seen before. And he's like, how much can I bend these words? How much can I, you know, fuck around with the English language? Like, that's kind of the vibe that you're going in with for this mixtape. And to see him tackle so many different beats. You have him tackling boom bap beats. You have him tackling soul and R&B beats.
Like, Kiara R&B beats,
too. He broke all the fucking rules on this mixtape and just went free-flowing with it and ended up being one of the most enjoyable experiences I've had.
Well, I think that's the best thing about Wayne's mixtapes, though, is the ability to have such a loose feel to his stuff. Like, that's what I really enjoy about this, is that it's entertaining. It doesn't, like, it doesn't feel too structured. It doesn't feel as if you even have to pay attention at certain times because, you know, Wayne's delivery and his, you know, his flow structures and the way that he's coming in with his cadences does enough for you. And I'm going to ask you this. Let's pull it up, man. Top three songs on this mixtape. I want to do it right now.
Top three songs. Let's do it. I'm going to have to go with We Taken Over.
That's an oh.
I'm going to go with New Cash Money and then Presidents.
That's fire. Okay. I'm going We Taken Over is number one for me. Get High Rule the World is number two for me as
really?
Well.
Okay.
Because I love the like the spin on it because like it's such a deep song, but it's obviously like a Nas classic, but he's kind of like, if I took over the world, I'd just take it over. Like, fuck you guys, you know? And then like he's just being super playful with it. Like, I love that. And then I would probably do New Cash Money. That's another big one for me on this mixtape. But listen, I'm a fan of both discs. I think the first side is definitely stronger for me. But most overall, it's one of the greatest mixtape listens that I've ever had. And if you guys want to listen to a real classic mixtape, like all the way back in the 2000 decade, this is where to start. Obviously, there's old G Unit and 50 Cent mixtapes, but I feel as if this is really what
iconic.
You know, a mixtape should really be like. But let's talk about the number one, man. We have 1999 by Joey Badass. And this and The Draw 3 could be interchanged for me at any sort of point.
Also Faces for me.
Faces in that conversation. But I feel as if The Draw 3 and 1999 are kind of like that,
I don't know,
that 10, bro. Like, those
concept
are 10s.
Is better than the other two with Faces.
That's true.
It's a better concept
album.
True.
But I will say this, is that
mixtape.
1999 is maybe the most impressive mixtape out of all this. It's also because, you know, how old was Joey Badass? Wasn't he like 16?
He made this 16? At 17.
17 years old. That's ridiculous, man. Like, he apparently had, you know, people like Jay-Z trying to sign him after this mixtape because it was like one of the best displays of lyricism that anyone has ever seen, regardless of decade or genre. And when you're coming into this, you won't think that this is a mixtape or that Joey Badass is 17. And it also what kickstarted the whole pro era sort of movement. And, you know, Capital C's came in, of course, with American Corruption. And there was a bunch of other things that go into it. But, you know, talk to me about 1999, man. Like, why do you enjoy this listen so much? And why do you think it's almost a near perfect project at that?
Yeah, this was just, I mean, I've never seen an artist, at least from this era, try to kind of replicate the sound of an old era and execute it so well. And I just love that the point of this mixtape for Joey was to kind of present himself as the last of a dying breed. Like, he came in and he's like, I'm gonna be hip-hop savior by rapping over these old boom bap beats that you would have heard in the 90s. And what's interesting about the title of this album is that it is 1999. And if you think about it, the golden era of hip-hop, of course, is the 90s. And the last year of the 90s is 1999. So it's kind of Joey's way of saying, like, I'm the last Jedi. Like, I'm the last fucking guy to come in here and rap the way that, you know, your favorite rappers did back in the 90s. And what he was able to do here was amazing on a lyrical standpoint. I mean, all the poetic devices that he uses, the alliteration, for example, on songs like Hard Knock, where he raps, I take the competition out of my commission with my composition. There's just so many bars to take away from this. And also, you get classic songs like Survival Tactics, where the chemistry between him and Capital Steez is phenomenal. And he also, Joey replicates Biggie's flow from The Warning on this song, and the way that he executes it, such a beautiful homage. And apart from that, he also showed us his storytelling chops on multiple songs. So what Joey did here was really prove that, you know, although certain rappers from his era are kind of distancing themselves from this lyrical type of hip hop, he was still there and doing it as good as, you know, his prior
absolutely artist. And I love what you said about the storytelling tracks, because if you look at something like Penny Roll or like, you know, Daily Routine, where he kind of takes you through his day to day and also talks about like maybe his love life and takes you through some more playful stuff. So even as a kid listening to this, it actually is accessible to you. But what I also love about this project is that Joey has the ability to blow up on the scene without having to make commercially successful records. Like, that's what I love about this, is that it's what hip hop is supposed to be by its, you know, most basic and purest form. And at the time in 2011, if you go back to it, like, there was a crisis. Like, people definitely thought that the genre was going, you know, in the wrong direction. And there was a lot of people saying, like, yo, what's going to happen? And, you know, numerous people like Dr. Dre and Jay-Z spoke upon this matter. But it was people like Joey Badass who came through and provided sheer lyricism, like, you know, and provided it at the highest level. There was no one else doing this besides him. And, of course, you know, there was sheer lyricists like, you know, Big Crit or J. Cole, you know, providing great mixtape runs too around that time. But I don't think it's on the level of 1999. It's just, you could take 1999 and you could slot it in the 90s and it would just sound as good, and you'd be able to compare it to other 90s projects. You can't necessarily do that with anything else. Plus, it's like, now you see groups like Griselda doing it, and you see some other artists, you know, trying to get into that lane of recapturing old sounds. Like, if you think about it, Joey was one of the first to really do that with 1999, because who was really touching that boom bap sound at the beginning of the 2010 decade?
And decades? To go mainstream doing
absolutely.
It, that was fucking impressive.
That's what's impressive. And the way that he's able to use this as sort of leverage to be able to catapult into a whole different era. Like, you know, this one mixtape also birthed Joey Badass's, you know, acting career that he's currently doing. It birthed, you know, several studio albums. Like, there's so much that was built off of, you know, this one iconic mixtape that it's a part of hip-hop history for me.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
it is,
like,
absolutely.
It's something that's just timeless, and something that if you had to ask me, like, you know, show me one mixtape that I have to listen to, I would show you 1999, because it has the perfect balance between accessibility and that mixtape feel.
Yeah,
so,
and
overall, just a classic for me at the end of the day.
The production is phenomenal too. I mean, think about a song like Waves, which J. Cole ends up hopping on for False Prophets. Like, you have iconic beats, and that's also because a lot of these productions came from MF Doom instrumentals, for example. So what Joey Badass accomplished here is timeless, and I do think that it is his magnum opus. I don't think that he can ever top this. I hope that he does. I'm always looking forward to new Joey Badass music, but that's how we'll end this off. Do you think he could top 1999?
Listen, honestly, it's kind of asking me if, like, Kendrick, you know, could top, like, To Pimp a Butterfly.
I know.
Hard to do. And, I mean, it's such a fan favorite. It's a fan favorite within the whole community. I mean, I've never heard anyone talk down upon 1999 or any of these mixtapes, you know, to be frank with you. But, listen, Joey's, like, one of my favorite rappers of all time, for that matter. I mean, right behind Kendrick, he's at, like, my number two for most listened to. And Joey's someone that I'm always looking forward to hearing. So hopefully we do get a new album from him soon. But guys, listen, let us know where maybe we fucked up on this list, and where maybe we should have added a different album, or a different mixtape, or something, you know, different in order, or, you know, sequencing. So we really appreciate you watching all of this. We're going to be doing content like this on the daily here at NFR, so subscribe if you have not already, smash the like button if you like this video. Thank you so much for watching this, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Thank you so much for watching the whole video. And if you're new to NFR, hit the subscribe button, because we're keeping you updated with the latest album releases of the year. And that includes update videos, album reviews, and our own original series, which are all available live on the channel. Not only that, but we also have our Patreon packages available in the description to this video. And there you can access exclusive bonus content. We do one extra video exclusive to Patreon per week. And we also have our own Discord, where you can chat with us on the daily. And we're actually sending in industry updates 24/7. So to catch all that, head over to the link in the description. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll catch you in the next one.